accession number 19782, reel 3.
Some were very nice and some were very brutal. And we were hoarded into this compound, which consisted of loads and loads of barracks, and we saw skeletons running around in their striped dresses and wooden clogs. And we were soon become some of them. But something happened before. As we went through the gates and were selected left and right, we were taken to the showers. We had to undress. We were given a piece of soap and a towel. It was an excuse of towel, just a rag. And we were going into these shower rooms. And we were standing there and standing, and no water came. And after quite a while, the doors opened from the other side, and we were cross because we were hot and dirty, that no water came. And then the gates from the other side opened, and we got another lot of fresh other striped dresses and a pair of knickers and wooden clogs, and we were in Stutthof. Later, much later, I found out that this was one of the gas chambers as well, because Stutthof had crematorium and gas chambers. The smoke came from the chimneys of the crematorium and the gas chambers. We were in a gas chamber, and at that time they didn't have any gas, and we, in our innocence, thought we were in a washroom. So that was one of the miracles, that at that time I survived.
Did you have a small group of friends or people to support you?
Yes, we supported each other. We supported each other, but we didn't have much strength. We could hardly... But we always kept our dignity, and we always kept ourselves decent. That means we were full of lice and so on. We had no chance of washing ourselves. In the mornings we were allowed a few minutes, or I don't know, seconds or minutes, to go to the toilet, and that was a terrible spectacle. These toilets, there were pits with a tree trunk over, and there was no sanitation, nothing whatsoever. When I think back, I don't know how one can survive it. We have had roll calls in the morning, roll calls in the afternoon, roll calls at night, and each time they made selections. Few times we had to undress, and SS men would walk in the rows, and with their flick of the finger they would decide, you go here, you go there. But that time we knew already what that meant. But the people didn't panic, the women didn't panic. They went quietly, and with a prayer on their lip, they went to the crematorium.
Were you doing any special work in the camp?
Nothing at all. We were just sitting around on the ground. We had to leave the barracks in the morning. Then we got a watery coffee and a slice of bread. I think it was either 50 grams or 100 grams. I can't swear to it now. That was all we got. And lunchtime we got a watery soup. But sometimes we even didn't get that. No, we didn't go to work in Stutthof. We were just there for selections. And one day the selection came my way. When the SS doctor selected 10 girls, all of same height and roughly of the same age. And we were taken to a barrack, and I thought, oh, this is good. I saw white covered beds, and I saw women sitting in bed. They were eating. Oh, I thought, now this is good. Here we get some food. And I didn't know in my ignorance what was happening. When suddenly a loud hailer outside in the camp was shouting, all those people who have worked in Riga for the ABA, for the ABA, for the Armee Bekleidungsamt, gather at the main gate. So I said to one of the men there in his white overall, I worked in Riga for the RBR. He said, Raus, out with you, as quickly as you can. So I ran out, and I was saved. Later on I found out it was a block where they made experiments. They injected for typhus, to take how long it takes before people get typhus, antidotes against typhus, phenol injections, which were lethal injections. This I was told after the war. I didn't know then. So then I said to my friends, now it's high time that we should get out of here. Because in the meantime, they were forming work groups to work for German firms in that part of Pomeria near the Baltic. So I said to my friends, the next one, when there's a group of, there always were groups of 500, if they go, let's go and go with them. So we went, we had the luck to be selected to go with them. So we went first from Stutthof in open cattle tracks, without food, without water. We were taken to Ravensbrück, but only very short. They put us on a meadow there, and we were lying there for a day or two, just in quarantine. We didn't see much of Ravensbrück. When they put us back on cattle trains, and we were taken to Sophienwalde, that is near Lauenburg in Pomeria. Here in a forest, there were Nissen huts. So 500 of us were taken to this forest where these Nissen huts were, and 15 or 25, I don't know, of us were in one Nissen hut. We had a commandant who was quite human. He didn't make our life easier, but he didn't make it more complicated and harder. He went to Stutthof as winter came. He got old coats for us, which were torn and full of lice, but that made no difference to us because we already were lice ridden by then. And we had to work in the morning the whole day for construction work, Mülke. We had to carry bricks. We had to work with a pickaxe to
we just got to change the cassette there.
Yes, I don't know. They want now for slave labor, they want us to fill in forms. But you have to fill in the forms. I have to go through all this over again and put it in writing.
Yeah.
It's very, don't know whether it's worth it.
Yeah.
You tell me what you want me to.
I will.
You have the
pigeon?
Yeah,
Ruth, when you were in Stutthof, how did you find out about the extermination process that was taking place then?
As we arrived at Stutthof, there was a selection to the right and to the left, and I was chosen to the right, and the ones to the left were taken away, and we asked, some of them asked, what happened to my mother, what happened to those on the side which were to stand on the other side, will we meet them again afterwards? So they pointed to the heavens and to the chimneys. They said, no, they're going there already. So they had cremated them and burnt them in the chimneys.
But presumably you didn't know about that
we didn't.
Immediately. How did
these... Yes, that we knew more or less immediately. We knew that immediately because we had the car post there. As I told you before, there were Germans and Austrians. They were either communists or... The communists, they were not bad. I mean, the criminals with their green Winkels, there were and also we had women, mainly Ukrainian women. There were ex-prostitutes and they were there in the camp and they became our police. And they told us, not direct and not me directly, but we found out that if you want to see your father or mother, look up to the heavens, they go up in smoke. And then we knew each time there were selections that they were taken on lorries to the crematorium.
So did you think this was going to happen to you at any moment?
Yes, we already resigned our fate. We thought we had lost everything and life wasn't worthwhile living, so we were resigned to our fate that this could happen to us. But that's when I decided if there's a chance of getting out of there to work. So I went to this construction firm.
So let's go then to your work with Mielke. What were the women SS guards like
then? They were worse than the men. They were terrible. They were beating us, putting the dogs on us. They were humiliating us. They were telling us we were dirty and filthy, but that wasn't our fault. We had nothing to keep ourselves clean with. We washed in the black coffee which we got in the morning as our daily ration. We washed our faces in black coffee just to look a bit more human and washed our hands in it. We had cement bags as we worked at Mielke. Cement bags we put around our legs with wires so that to keep the cold out. And we had one blanket which we had over our shoulders as we went to work. At work we sometimes got potatoes. They were boiled in big containers like you have pig's squill, yes, squill. And we would get that at lunchtime. A few potatoes. That sustained us a little until we came back in the evening where we got a slice of bread. And who became ill in this Sophienwalde, that was called, was sent to Stutthof and never heard of again.
Tell me about having to wash in the lake.
There were no sanitary facilities. The latrines, the toilets were the same as everywhere else. Was a ditch with a wooden plank over it. Not a plank, a tree trunk. And that was our toilets. And there again we were only allowed a few minutes when the SS girls kept shouting, raus, raus, that everything was went in a tempo. In the evenings when we came from work, as there was no water in this camp, it was a part of the forest where they had felled the trees and put these huts up. There was a lake. So they took us to the lake, the SS women, and we had to undress. By that time it was already winter of 44, autumn, winter 44. And we had to wash in the lake. And once I tried to swim a bit away, so they shouted, where does the goat think she is swimming to? And so I quickly came back. And we had nowhere to dry ourselves with. So over our wet bodies, we had to put the prison garb and a pair of knickers, that's all. And how we survived is a miracle. Only God knows. If there was a God, I don't know.
Did you believe in God? Were you still believing in God at that time?
At that time I didn't believe in anything. I only believed and only wanted once more to sleep in a clean bed, have a bath, sleep in a clean bed, and have my tummy full of food. Never mind bread or potato, whatever it was. That was my only prayer. Once more, just to eat. And to be satisfied that the tummy was full. So occasionally I did pray and I asked God to get us out of there.
What were the conditions like in your barracks?
We had straw in the barrels and we were lying there like sardines. If somebody had to get out at night to use the latrines, you can't call them toilets, the others moved. And when you came back, you couldn't find your hole again between them. There was always a fight. Come on, make place. This was my space, and so on. No, but the camaraderie was very good. Yes.
Was that a factor in your survival, that there was this camaraderie in your barracks?
I think so. We gave each other moral support, and the elder women, I mean, they were not very old. For us, they were already in the late 30s, let's say, but they had been housewives. They had their own households at home. They would exchange recipes, how they did cook, how they would cook, how they would do. And we were starving, all of us. So we would say, shut up. What are you making those recipes for? What are you telling these recipes for? Just for something to do. They were telling each other recipes, how they cooked their chickens and how they cooked their potatoes and what they did with their bread.
Did you manage to get any news from the outside?
We had no idea. But where we worked at Milke, one day we saw, and then for quite a long time, we saw British prisoners of war. They came with a German soldier. They went to the forest to fell trees. They looked fantastic. That was still the end of summer. They were in their singlets, brown, and with their spades over their shoulders, they went to the forests. And one day, one of the girls came with a little piece of paper to me. This piece of paper had gone round from hand to hand, where it said in English, "Who are you?" So I took a piece of my leggings, which were pieces of cement bags, and with a piece of brick, I wrote Jews, because I had a little bit of school English, not much Jews, and I put it on the side. But this was all under the risk of your own life. If you were seen by the SS men doing it, they would shoot you on the spot. And the next day, on that same spot, it said, "What do you want?" And my friend asked for a comb, and I asked for cotton and a needle. And this cotton I still have in my prison garb till today. But how the war... Sometimes we heard, their camp wasn't far from ours, we heard some shouting and rejoicing. So we thought maybe the war is over, maybe the Germans lost the war, but we had no idea what was happening. No. We had no news. We didn't even know what time of year it was, what the calendar day was. All these dates I give you were given to me afterwards by hearsay.
Tell me about when in Christmas 44 you were all assembled and marched out of the camp.
At Christmas time 44, the Russian front came nearer. And Riga was already liberated at that time, so we were told after the war. They marched us to a different camp. It was bitter, bitter cold and snowing, and the wind was howling. And they marched us to a place called Chinov. I've got a book here about Stutthof. It describes it very well. So we came to Chinov. But on the way, who couldn't walk anymore, who lagged behind, was shot. And the road was littered with Jewish corpses. So we came to Chinov, and also in a camp or whatever it was, I don't know, for a few days, without hardly any food and hardly any water, no sanitation as before. when they kept on marching us again, until finally, and always the same, who couldn't walk was shot at the wayside. My friend and me, we could hardly walk, and we said, now let's go and lie down, we can't anymore. When a German passed and he said, she is not worth a bullet, leave them, they are not worth a bullet.
There's another phone.
Yes.
I thought you pulled it out.
It must be another one.
Yes. Upstairs in the bedroom.
May I go up there?
Are you sure? I don't know where you pulled it out in upstairs. Oh dear.
That you
really didn't care what was happening to you.
In
1 second.
Yes.
Oh dear.
Okay.
So what was your state of mind by that time when you were being marched out of the camp?
By that time we were like zombies. We had nothing to eat, nothing to wear, we were cold, and we were humiliated, and we couldn't care less what was happening to us. We had lost everything, and life wasn't worth while living. So we just marched along, we gave each other not moral support, but physical support as well as we could. Because when I was liberated, which I tell you about later on, I weighed less than 4 stone. Before somebody comes, before a body goes to 4 stone, you can imagine it doesn't happen overnight.
So what were the conditions of this march? When were you marching, in the day or the night?
We were marching at night, and during the day they would rest us in a forest or in an old barn. And just shortly before we were liberated, which we didn't know, my friend and I, 2 friends and I, we couldn't walk any further. And we said, we stay here in this, there was a ditch next to the road. Let's be here and be like the others, and we, at least we be buried together with the others when they see us, when they find us. When a German soldier or SS man passed us, oh, he said, they are not worth a bullet. And he just walked away.
So, do you know how long you were marching?
I don't know. For a few weeks with interruptions. I know that we are told afterwards we were 3,000, because from all over different groups of prisoners came and joined the column. We were supposed to set out 3,000 and were liberated on March the 10th, only 300. The rest were all killed on the roadside.
So how did the march end? Really?
On the Saturday morning of March the 10th, I mean these dates I got afterwards, I didn't know at the time, they herded us into a barn on a very big estate. They bolted the doors, and some of us panicked, some of the women. Oh, they're going to shoot us. Some said they will put petrol over us and they will burn us, and the panic broke out. Because in the distance we heard shooting. We didn't know what sort of shooting it was. We thought they're coming now and shoot us. But as I said before, we were already so down and so weak that we couldn't care less what happened to us. When suddenly the shooting came nearer and nearer and nearer, and we heard some terrible noise, some rolling of we didn't know what it was, terrific noise. When the barn door was torn open, and there were Russian soldiers, and they shouted, and we were with some Latvian Jewish women and men at that time as well, and they shouted, Kinderlach, wir seinem befreit. That means children, we are free. So that was my hour of liberation. But we were so ill, which we didn't know. We were ill with typhus. We were taken, this friend of mine and I, we tried to walk away, how weak we were. We suddenly got strength and walked away. We were afraid the Germans might come back because it was a fighting front. The Russians were going forwards and the Germans were retreating, but we were not to know that they might not be able to come back. So my friend and I, we walked away, and then exhausted and ill, we were lying in somewhere in a doorway when the Russian came and stood in front of us, and he asked, "Are you Jewish girls or Jewish women?" So we said yes. He spoke only Yiddish. I learned Yiddish in the camp. I didn't speak Yiddish before, but I speak it well now. So he said, "Are you Yiddish Mädelach?" That means, "Are you Jewish girls?" So we said yes. So he took us. He ordered a car or cart or something, I don't know, and took us to his hospital. He was a chief doctor of a Russian military hospital in Bromberg, in Bydgoszcz. And his name was Miron Vladimovich Schwarzman. He was a colonel by rank, and he was a chief doctor of this big military hospital. And that was another miracle that he found us there. So we stayed at this hospital in isolation, of course, and they nursed us. And when the war finished in May of 45, we were still there, and they wanted to take us back to Russia, my friend and me. So we said, no, we have to go back and have to look for relatives. And so that was on the 15th of June. I remember that date because by that time I was quite lucid. On the 15th of June 1945, I went with my friend by train from Bydgoszcz, from Bromberg, but only a few stations because everything was bombed and so on. And we walked part of the way until we came, it took us days until we came to Berlin. Berlin at that time was under Russian occupation and absolutely in smithereens. We were pleased to see Berlin destroyed. We went to a police station and we said that we are Jewish women or girls from the concentration camp, and they told us to go to the Jewish hospital in the Iranienburgerstraße, which was made into a DP camp and hospital for those who had come back from the camps. There I parted with my friend. She was also an only child. Her parents from Dresden. Her parents worked for Zeiss Icon, making war-important instruments. So the poor girl had to go on her own, and the parents were left behind. So while we were in Berlin, she had hoped that her parents might still be alive in Dresden. So she went to Dresden, and I wanted to go back to Lingen, and in the hope that some of my cousins or some of my uncles or somebody might still return. It took me from the June of 45 to the 20th of August 45 until I came back to Lingen. Everything was in ruins. The trains didn't work. I got a lift partly from Russian soldiers until I came to the river Molde. And they were all, Russian soldiers were patrolling the river because people had tried to swim across into the American zone. When I heard that, I thought to myself, I shall chance it one night. The Russians had a pontoon bridge which they patrolled day and night, but I chose a moment and I thought, what can I lose? I came this far and let's try. So I undressed myself, and the little bundle which I have, I've got still that little bag upstairs, I strapped to my back, and half naked I swam through the river Molde. I knocked at a German farmhouse, and I was in the American sector of Germany. And it took me then, and they took me in. They gave me clean clothes and warm clothes and dry clothes and fed me. And then with lots of troubles and so on, I finally came to my town of birth, Lingen, around about the 20th of August. And in Germany, there is a rule or a law. You have, after 24 hours, you have to register with the police. I went to neighbors of my parents, which were very decent people. They took me in until I had the house of my parents, got the house of my parents back, which took quite a long while. And Thanks.
Stop.
Okay.
Jim will tell you when he's running.